You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, the 31st and final day of January, the year 2019. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or Spotify, and if you enjoy it, give it a good review in iTunes. We certainly do appreciate it. Well, on today's show, Michael Nania from my website, GangreneNation.com, joins us. The reason he's joining us is every week we do a mailbag on this podcast, and every week people ask about free agent targets. And look, I mean, I have answers, but Michael's gone and started to do some deep dives on various potential free agents the Jets could look into signing. He just completed his series on the wide receiver position, so I felt like, why don't we bring in somebody who's really done a ton of homework on free agents? And we'll try and bring him back over the course of the offseason as we head into free agency as he completes his series on each position. Again, the first position group he looked at was the wide receiver position. He looked at number of potential options for the Jets, and we talk about them on today's show. So let's go to our discussion with Michael. Returning to the show is Michael Nania of Gangrene Nation. Michael's written a great series on potential Jets free agents. So far, he's focused on the wide receiver position, so that's what our focus will be. Michael, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me back on.
Of course. So Jets have a number of options in free agency. Obviously, they're going to have a lot of cap space, and you know, depending on what you're looking for, depending on what roles you're looking to fill, there are various options out there. But I'm interested in what your view is on what the Jets have at the position and what they need at the position. You know, all of our listeners know my feelings on it. And I think your views are a little different than mine, especially about Quincy Enunwa. So before we get into some of the options, just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, what the Jets have and what they could use.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, I think the Enunwa, their decision to re-sign him, I think it's definitely a move that I was in favor of, just because you compare Enunwa to what the free agent market is looking like. And I think the upside he brings to the table definitely is, I think he does have a similar, maybe even higher ceiling than a lot of these guys who are on the market, because there isn't a legit star receiver on this market that you're looking at without, unless you're going into the trade market. If you're just looking at the free agents, there isn't that one guy who you can be sure is going to be a legit number one or star receiver. So I feel like the upside and the continuity was worth the price with Enunwa. And there is still a lot of risk with it, because the Jets are making him a top 25, top 30 paid receiver. So borderline number one kind of money for a guy who does have 5 career touchdowns in 5 seasons. So, and also, of course, a big reason that he has only scored 5 touchdowns and hasn't produced that much is because of injury. So definitely a lot of risk with Enunwa because he hasn't developed as much. He didn't have as good of a season this year as we'd hope. He started off really quickly and then kind of tailed off after that, and definitely injuries are a huge, huge question mark with him. So definitely risky, but I feel like he does have a lot of upside to be a really good player. His athleticism is great. You can see it in the yards after catch game. He's great with the ball in his hands. And I do think that down the field, he definitely has a lot of potential to be a really good two-way kind of guy, both in the screen game and downfield. I feel like he didn't get used downfield enough this year, because when you look back at 2016, a big part, because he had a really solid 2016 season, and a big part of that was what he did on go routes and post routes. He didn't use those routes too much, but when he did, he was really efficient reeling those catches in. I believe he had one of the best deep ball catch rates in the league, from Pro Football Focus put that out. So he was really efficient on those downfield routes in 2016. So I was excited to see him potentially get more opportunities to do that this year. And he didn't really get it that much, because he was primarily using that screen game probably too often. And he actually put out a tweet recently where he was kind of taking a shot at Bates, asking for less yak plays this year. But so I definitely think that he does have that potential to be a really good all-around player, but I just think injuries are the big question with him. So the Jets did bring back Enunwa, and Robbie Anderson is a restricted free agent, of course, so I think he should be back. Yeah, because he definitely developed some really good chemistry with Darnold down the stretch, and it wasn't just the go route, because the go route wasn't even there that much for him this season, and especially down the stretch when he's playing well with Darnold. He barely went to that at all. He had the one big catch in the Bills game before the touchdown, but that was about it. But he was really getting it going in the red zone after not doing anything in the red zone all season. He was getting some more yards underneath. All around, he's just developing really good chemistry with Darnold, and it's the second year in a row we've really seen him down at the end point of the season, the last quarter, the second half of the year, that we've seen him kind of diversify his game a little bit more. So I think Anderson definitely has to come back. He's an elite deep threat, and his chemistry with Darnold's great at the end of last season. So I think they'll give him either a first or second round tender and then go from there, because if you can get a first rounder for Robbie Anderson, I think you got to take that. But I think they'll give him either a first or second round tender and see what happens from there. But I think those two guys will both be back, and it's a decent 1-2 punch, but you still are lacking in terms of getting that legit number one guy, which everyone asks for, but it's hard to get that. There are only 10 to 15 maybe legit number one guys, or guys who you would give that tag, like your Mike Evans, your Antonio Brown, Odell. Those guys are hard to get. So just because a guy isn't bad doesn't mean that he doesn't have value. So beyond those two guys, I think that for me, the main hole I think is the slot receiver position. I think Jermaine Kearse was running there a lot this season. Quincy Enunwa was there a lot. And I do think, like I said, Enunwa does have the versatility to play outside. I think that you look back at his numbers in 2016, I actually compared his numbers, how he produced as a receiver inside the numbers versus outside. And even though his sample size was smaller outside, he was way more efficient as an outside receiver. So I do think he does have the versatility to play outside. You can really move him anywhere. So I think the primary hole is that slot receiver. They didn't really have that this year. Like I said, Jermaine Kearse was playing there a lot this season. He was frankly terrible this season. His efficiency was bad. He was just making mistakes he wasn't making the season before, whether it was awareness, it drops, whatever it was. He was not the same player this year, and it really hurt the team. So I think slot receiver is a big, a huge hole for them to fill between Anderson, if he comes back, and Enunwa. And also another thing is Gase, like we saw in Miami, he likes to run those wide receiver screens. So to have another guy in addition to Enunwa who could run those plays behind the line definitely adds more unpredictability to the offense and can let Enunwa run downfield a little bit more. So to me, I think slot receiver is the primary hole. And obviously, if Anderson does go, they're going to have to find a replacement for him, someone who can get downfield. But assuming he does come back, I'm definitely looking at that slot receiver position first and foremost.
It's NFL playoff time. It's the most wonderful time of the year. And you can get in on the daily action by signing up at MyBookie today. They pay fast when you win. Ownership really cares about good customer service, and they offer the craziest prop bets. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. If you join now, MyBookie will offer you a 50% deposit bonus by using promo code LOCKEDON25. That's LOCKEDON, number 5, when you deposit to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON25. At MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
You wrote 5 profiles on potential receivers, and I think around 3 of them were guys who could fill that slot receiver role, Golden Tate, Adam Humphries, and Jamison Crowder. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. So why don't you take us through some of the pros and cons you see in each of these guys?
Yeah, so those were definitely the 3 guys, and I think will be the top 3 options at the slot spot this offseason. Cole Beasley is also out there. I might get to him soon, but I think that those 3 guys, Crowder, Humphries, and Tate, are probably your top 3 options, and it's kind of tough to rank them. They all do have legitimate pros and legitimate cons. Like we said, there isn't that number one guy out there who you could just splurge on and say, this guy's going to make us better. They all do have legitimate question marks. So I'll start with Tate. I think with Tate, the main question is just his age. He's going into his 30s, but his track record of production way outweighs any of the other guys on this market. You're talking about a guy who had 3 1,000-yard seasons in Detroit and was one of the top 10 receivers in the league from the time he was in Detroit from 2014 until he left in 2018. Top 10 in receiving yards in the league, so that would definitely put him, if not number 1 among slot receivers, top 3 at the worst. So he's a guy who's been really productive, and the production, he did have a down year in 2018, but that drop-off really came after he went to Philadelphia. His numbers in Detroit this past season were right on par with where he was throughout all of his first few years he was in Detroit. So he was playing producing just as well as he was when he's one of the top 10 receivers in the game. But then he went to Philadelphia, and that's when his numbers really dropped off and made this past season seem like a down year. So it's tough to figure out because like we said, he's going to be 31 when next season starts. So that's definitely a question mark with the guy going into his 30s. And he's also playing a variety of receiver in the slot, getting a lot of underneath touches, where he's taking a lot more hits than most wide receivers do. He's not catching balls on the sideline, going out of bounds. He's catching the ball in the middle of the field. He's taking screen passes and getting hit a lot. So he's been playing a while. He's 31, like we said. So definitely a lot of mileage on his tire. So he could be declining, but the production, his production in 2018 definitely is a sign that that could be happening. So with Tate, you're definitely getting a better track record than any of these other guys, but there is the question mark with age and his decline this season. So it would be a risk to definitely bring in a guy that old, because he's probably going to get paid. Like we talked about his track record. This is a guy who was one of the top 10, top 15 most productive receivers in the league for a while until this past half season. So he's going to get paid. So right on par with some of these guys who are half a decade younger. So it'll definitely be a risk to bring in a guy in his 30s, but he does bring a more proven track record than some of these other receivers. If you're looking for someone who's going to be reliable and you could bank on pass production. So that's pretty much the gist with Tate. He's in his 30s, but does have production that no other receiver on the market does. So we'll move on to Humphreys. Humphreys is an interesting one. You look at his efficiency and his production. He's quietly maybe the most efficient receiver out of this group. But question mark with him is the fact that he's playing in a Tampa Bay offense. They threw the ball a ton. I believe they were second in passing attempts this season. And he's also playing with a lot of really good talent around him on that offense, taking attention off of him. He's playing with Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, Chris Godwin, who's been really good so far, Cameron Brayton, O.J. Howard at tight end. So that's a lot of talent around him. And you'd think an opposing defense would be focusing on probably all five of those guys before Humphrey. So he does have a lot of talent around him. He's playing in an offense that really boosts his numbers. The Buccaneers were trailing a lot, and they threw the ball a lot. And Todd Monken, who was a Jets head coaching candidate, was doing a really good job there with the way he's running that offense. So Humphrey's numbers, though, are pretty good. His first down rate's consistently been – he had a 47% first down rate and a 108 passer rating when targeted in 2018. Those are phenomenal numbers, no matter what your role is. So that catches your attention. So when you're doing that, definitely it deserves a look. And he's been durable as well. He played all 32 possible games over the past two seasons and has only missed one over the past three. So he's durable. He's only 26. His efficiency is great. He's one of the best yak guys in the league. I believe he was second among wide receivers in yards after catch per reception in 2016, and he was top 25 this past year. So he's a really good screen weapon. He can get those 5-10-yard out routes to move the chains, and he's been really efficient, and he's young. It's just a question mark with, because you look at his market value from SpotTrack. He's due to make, they're estimating him to be worth about $10 million per year on the market. So this is a guy who was undrafted, isn't very athletic, doesn't have a great athletic profile, and he's playing with an offense that you would think would boost his numbers a lot with all the talent there and how much they threw the ball. So you're banking on him definitely probably stepping up a little bit from where he was, and seeing, you'd have to figure out if he could translate that production somewhere else. So it's definitely a question mark with Humphreys if he can do that, but he does bring a level of efficiency and upside that some of these other guys don't have. And then moving on to Crowder, I think, and it's tough because these three guys, Humphreys, Tate, and Crowder, are all really close when you balance their pros and cons in terms of their value. But Crowder might be my favorite because when I went through and watched his tape and just how he's getting his production, he's a downfield threat. He's not just the check down guy you'd expect out of the typical slot receiver. He's making a lot of plays downfield and a lot more than most slot receivers do. He's averaging over 11 yards per reception for his career and still catching about 2/3 of his targets. Since he entered the league, the only other receivers who are averaging as many yards per reception and a similar catch rate as Jameson Crowder is would be Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, Adam Thielen, Tyreek Hill, and Doug Baldwin. So the way he's been able to make plays downfield and still rack up a slot receiver kind of level of check down reliability is pretty rare. So he's been doing a really good job making plays downfield there in Washington. And Pro Football Focus also had him as a top five most efficient receiver on hitch routes in the 2017 season. So he's versatile. He can make plays down the field. He's a good yak guy. He was one of the top yak wide receivers this past season. I believe he's fourth among wide receivers in yak reception in 2018. So he can make those plays after the catch. He can get downfield, but the question with him has got to be durability. He missed 7 games this past season with an ankle injury, and he's had some he's been nicked up a little bit before that. Even though he did play most of his games for 2018, he does have an injury history. And also fumbles are a question with him. Over his first three seasons, he had 12 fumbles, which is tied for the league lead among non-quarterbacks. And 7 of those were as a punt returner, only 5 as a receiver. But that still is a pretty high numbers of fumbles to have in the passing game. So he does have fumble questions, injury questions, And his production has been really erratic too. He's had some really good stretches, but there have been stretches, particularly to start seasons and to finish seasons, where he's gone a lot of games in a row without doing all too much. So Crowder definitely brings a level of versatility for a slot receiver that's pretty unique, especially compared to this market. And he is still young too. He'll be 26 at the start of the 2019 season. And look at his overall production. It's not too far off from his SpotTrack market value. He's valued at about $8 million per year, which would put him at, I believe, 27th at wide receiver. And you look at his numbers overall, he's 30th in catches and 39th in yards since he entered the league. Or 30th in receiving yards, 32nd in receptions among wide receivers since he entered the league. So not too far off from his overall value. So, yeah, definitely those three guys. I think the Jets do have to go out and get one of them because – you look at where they are right now. They don't really have that pure slot guy, and that position really hurt them last year with Jermaine Kearse. So I think it would definitely be really valuable for the Jets to get a reliable guy for Sam Darnold in the slot, and it would add more unpredictability. It would fit Adam Gase's offense, and they have plenty of cap space. So definitely with all three of these guys, the price does scare you a little bit. You're talking about $10 million per year for either the old Golden Tate, Adam Humphries, who was just racking up numbers in Tampa Bay, or Jameson Crowder, who has injury question marks. And at the end of the day, he hasn't had a 900-yard season yet for Crowder. So the upside definitely is a little bit of a question mark with Crowder because he hasn't had that big breakout season yet. So 8 to $10 million per year or more for those three guys definitely scares you a little bit, but that's just the market price. So that number still would put these guys only around 25th, 30th among wide receivers. And their pass production does kind of put them all three of them in that neighborhood. So it is scary, those prices. It's hard to say it's not, because it definitely is, but I do think that the Jets are in a good position to where they could add one of these guys and be confident in getting an upgrade, even if they're not superstars or a surefire number one. But I do think the Jets could potentially get a lot of value out of any of those three guys.
And then the other two options you've written about are Funchess and Williams, who I think would probably both have different roles. These are not your typical slot receivers.
Yeah, definitely. So those would probably be two of the most intriguing outside names in terms of guys who could play in the typical X receiver role on the outside on the line of scrimmage. So those two guys are both younger. There are some other more veteran names out there, but these are the two guys who probably have gotten the most attention as an attractive free agent option in terms of someone who could have more upside, potentially get better with their next team, but two completely different skill sets with Funchess and Williams. Funchess, you're talking about that big body guy who fits the profile of that receiver who you would want to draft at the top of the draft, or that typical number one you would see, 6'4", 225. So he's exactly the kind of guy who you want to throw that ball up to in the red zone, make some plays in the intermediate range. But so the thing with Funchess is, like I said, he does have that profile that you love, his height and his size, his arms, it's all above 90th percentile above wide receiver. So he's got that size and speed that you like. Well, not the speed, but he does have the size that you like for a wide receiver. So he's definitely an intriguing physical prospect, but in Carolina, his production didn't really live up to what you would expect out of a guy at that size. So you do sign Funchess, and he's really young. He's only going to be 25 throughout the 2019 season. So definitely some potential untapped upside there with Funchess, but his production didn't really match up what you would hope with the Panthers. And the Panthers too are a team that haven't had a lot of success finding receivers. So for them to not want to be interested in bringing him back, if you are able to sign him, definitely isn't too great of a sign. Cause like I said, the Panthers haven't had a lot of success filling out that position over there. So moving on from Funchess isn't a great indictment on him. And his snaps also decreased tremendously over the end of the 2018 season. He was playing only about a quarter of the snaps or the final few games of the season. And he had a down year in 2018. He had only 549 yards, which was 65% of what he had in his career year in 2017. He had the second fewest yards per target among 6'4 or taller wide receivers, which is better than only Calvin Benjamin, who has one of the worst reputations among wide receivers in the NFL with what he's been doing the past few seasons. So Funchess was also 62nd in wide receiver DVOA. He had career lows in yards per reception. His passer rating when targeted was 68, so he's coming off of a down year, and also a year in which he had some injury questions in the middle of the season that caused him to see some decreased playing time, and also had some decreased snap or some decreased playing time at the end of the season that wasn't really related to injury. So in addition to just the fact that his overall production levels throughout his career aren't that good, he's coming off of a year that was one of his worst in the league. So Funchess does bring that upside as a guy of great size, but it's a gamble to give him what his market value is at about $9 million per year, which would be 26 highest at wide receiver. That's a huge question mark.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just remember even like going back to when he was drafted, I remember like watching some of his film at Michigan, and like I was always left wanting more. Like I'd look at him, I'd look at like his physical stature, and I'd be like, that guy should go out there and dominate. And he just like, I always felt like there was just something missing. Like he was never as good as he should have been.
Yeah, definitely. And in the article I posted, there were a couple of clips there that I showed in which he's just not using that size to his advantage. There was one clip where he's against Eli Apple in the red zone, and he just lets Apple body him and cling him to the sideline, and he loses the jump ball, and it's a terrible throw from Cam Newton here, way underthrown, but he probably is not catching this ball even if it was a good throw because he's not using his size. He's 6'4", 225. You got to body that cornerback and win that matchup and go up and get the ball. So he doesn't use his size to his advantage as much as you'd like him to. So he is still 25, and we like the size, but it's, like you said, just going back to when he was drafted, it's just a theme that he hasn't been able to produce as much as his size would hope. So I think Funchess is definitely the biggest gamble out of all the guys that I profiled so far because similar price to all these other guys with not nearly as much production. So definitely a huge gamble, and that's the kind of gamble you might want to take on a guy in the draft who has a good profile that hasn't produced that much in college, but for a pro free agent at about $9 million a year, if he does get that, is a huge gamble. And it's a much different situation than the other outside receiver that I looked at, which was Tyrell Williams. So Williams has had some really great efficiency in his career with the Chargers, even though his production hasn't been at that high of a volume. He's number 5 in yards per target among all wide receivers since he entered the league, among wide receivers with at least 200 targets, which was over 100 different players. So he's a tremendous deep threat. He's got great speed, similar stature to Robbie Anderson. He's 6'4", only about 200. So he's a skinny, slender guy who's got a ton of speed. He gets downfield. He wins those jump balls, and he makes a ton of plays on the post route, and he's always going to finish those catches down the field when he is open. So that's why those traits are why his numbers per target are really good. His first down rate is tremendous. His DVOA, he's been top 25. Wide receiver DVOA in each of the past 3 seasons. His yards per reception is consistently really good. And since 2016, he's got 42 20-plus yard receptions. That's 13th most in the league over that span. And that makes up 28% of all of his catches for over 20 yards. 28% of all of his catches were 20-plus yard gains. And the league average for that is only 9%. So he's making those 20-plus yard plays about 3 times as often as the average pass catcher does in the league. So he's a big play threat. He's going to get downfield. He's got speed. He's going to make teams respect that speed. He's just a very similar player to Robbie Anderson. So I think that is actually the biggest question with him. If the Jets do bring back Robbie Anderson, then you have two guys who have redundant skill sets because Williams hasn't really been able to have consistent stretches of production, have games where he's moving the chains in a lot of different ways. It's really been the big play, not much else for him. The one positive against that for Williams is that in 2016, when Keenan Allen went out for most of the season with his season-ending injury, Williams posted over 1,000 yards and was a top 5 DVOA receiver and had 7 touchdowns. So he had a really good season the one time the Chargers really needed him to be a diversified player and really carry that offense. He did a good job the one time they needed him to do that. And then the 2 seasons since then, he's just played his role and made a bunch of big plays and been efficient. So I think with Williams that I don't think he could have too many weapons. He is redundant to Robbie Anderson, but he's also been extremely efficient and as great of a big play threat as Robbie Anderson has been, Williams has been even more so of a big play threat with as efficient as he's been. So, and he's also still young. He's only going to be 27 on September 1st, so you hope you can use his prime years. So it's definitely a legit question mark putting him next to Robbie Anderson. If he does come back, can the Jets do the Jets think that those two guys can play together and complement each other and actually make plays in more than one way? It's a legit question mark, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's anything wrong with having two deep threats like that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying go out and sign Williams, but I mean, I do think that there's a way it works is you have one deep threat on one side, the other on the other side, so now the defense can't shade either side. You focus too much on Robbie, Williams beat you deep. You focus too much on Williams, Robbie beat you deep, and they create space underneath. Maybe Anunua plays more in the middle of the field, uses that size, uses that running after the catchability. You have Herndon working underneath. So, I mean, I see a scenario where that could work out. I don't think it's necessary. Like, I get the concerns. I'm not sure I'd be willing to pay him the type of money he's projected to get, but I do understand the thought process behind it, because it's not like having two deep threats is a bad thing.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely is. It doesn't have to be exclusive. You can have two guys run downfield on the same play. And like you said, has a huge effect on how the defense has to play. Play receivers like that, because you can't shade one side. Just take away that single deep threat. So they would complement each other well and make each other better. But definitely with Williams, the price is a little bit of a question mark, because right now his spot track value is 9.6 per year. So he'd be 23rd highest at wide receiver at that price. And you're talking about a guy who doesn't really have that many games in which he's carried the team beyond that one big play. So last season he didn't have any games with more than four first downs in a single game, or four first downs or more in a single game. He didn't do that once this season. And even Anunua did that three times this season. Even Jermaine Kearse did that twice this season. So it's a little bit of an indictment on his ability to, you know, carry a team and be able to play up to that level that his price tag says he should be able to play up to. So the biggest question mark is less so if he could coexist with a guy like Robbie Anderson, and more if he could do more than what Robbie Anderson can do and what he's been able to do, or Williams has been able to do the past few seasons. So it's a question mark with all these receivers. The price tags on the wide receiver market are high because it's a position that teams are really valuing, as they want to help out their young quarterbacks and extend the careers of older quarterbacks. It's becoming a really expensive position. So definitely with Williams, $10 million per year is a question mark, but you are getting efficiency and big playability that very few other, not just receivers on this market have, but receivers in the entire league have matched.
Yeah, I'll tell you, no matter who the Jets are signing, it seems like they're going to be paying like somewhere between $8 and $10 million, yep, any of these guys. Mm-hmm. And that's just, like you said, it's the way the league is. I remember when the Jets signed Anunua to that extension, my first reaction was kind of $9 million. Wow. And then like I looked at some of the guys who are making comparable money. You have Dante Moncrief was at $9.6 million per year. Marquise Lee, $8.5 million. Kenny Stills, $8 million. Albert Wilson, $8 million. Paul Richardson, $8 million. I don't think any of those guys are that good. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe that deal's not so bad. It's just the price of doing business at the wide receiver position in today's NFL.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's just, the league is pass-centric now. That's all anybody ever talks about. More passing attempts than ever, less rushing attempts. So obviously, anyone who impacts the pass game, it's going to see their value go up. So you're talking about the wide receiver position, which is pretty much entirely predicated on impacting the pass game. So the value is going to go up. And definitely, because free agency always is, it's never what fans think it's going to be. It's hard to find starters in the free agent market because it's easy for teams to keep guys. They can create space. They have the ability to keep these guys, give them more money than they can get elsewhere. They have franchise tag, the luxury of being able to use that at times. So it's hard for starters to hit the market. They don't really hit the market that often. So when a guy hits the market who has proven production of being a good player in the league, or maybe like a Funchess who has really unique measurables, when guys like that hit the market, they're going to be expensive. So it's not a pick your poison situation, because these are all guys who can help your team. But whoever you're signing, it's seeming pretty likely, and like is the case with the Anunua, that you're going to be paying them more than their production is going to warrant. But at the end of the day, that's the worth of cap space. What you're paying for is the reliability that you're getting someone who is going to be at least a competent starter for you, because that's something the draft doesn't provide. If you rely on the second round or the third round or fourth round to fill a starting hole, then those guys, the history shows you that the chance that those guys actually, or one of those picks actually turns out to be a good starter, is really low. You're talking like 20% or lower at best if you're picking second or third round. So I think that's what you overpay for in free agency, just having a really good idea of what you're getting. Because obviously the draft is how you build your team. That's how you get stars. Because like we said, stars don't hit the market. It's extremely rare for those guys to hit the market because teams keep their good players that they draft. So the draft is how you build your core, get your stars. That's the most important factor. Free agency is where you have to go out and plug holes, and you're going to have to overpay to plug them. But At the end of the day, you're choosing if you want to leave that hole up to the lottery ticket of the draft, or just plug it up and help. Like the Jets situation, they have Sam Darnold. He needs a lot of help. They have a lot of cap space. So whoever the Jets do sign to fix the wide receiver position, because they're going to have to do it. They have all the space. There are some decent options, and they have to help Darnold. Whoever they pick, they're going to be overpaying a little bit. But at the very least, you can feel at least pretty comfortable with any of these guys that you know what you're getting, what they're going to bring to the table, and you can feel confident that they can at least be a competent starter. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle this. Whether Robbie Anderson comes back is going to have a huge effect on it, but it's going to be interesting to see what their values are with looking at all the different skill sets of these potential targets. It's going to be interesting to see which guys they value the most, who they're in on, and who they chase the hardest, and of course who they eventually end up with. So it should be interesting to see how they value this position, and it'll tell us a lot about what Adam Gase sees in this offense and what his values are. So it should be interesting.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, Mike.
Yeah, thanks a ton for having me on.
And thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like the show, subscribe to iTunes, Spotify, and leave it a good review in iTunes. Have a great Thursday, and we will be back tomorrow to talk about the Super Bowl.